Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
We've got moves. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, December 15th. Frank Stanfill and Scott White here. And last week, we had a big Lance Lynn trade to kick off winter meetings. I thought it was going to be a huge week of moves, Scott, and it wasn't really. I mentioned we have moves, but they're not really big moves. So what's going on, Scott? We've got some stuff to talk about. This is Scott's last week on the podcast. Not forever. Just until the new year. I hope not forever as well. Do you think one of the big free agents will sign while you're gone, Scott?
I mean, it depends what you're calling a big free agent. It's been pretty quiet through Christmas the past couple off seasons. And early indications are, I know some of the national beat writers are talking about how it's going to be a slow moving off season again. So I don't know. Maybe one will sign, but I doubt we'll see a whole slew of signings while I'm gone.
I am fully ready for it. I am 100% ready for everyone to sign while Scott's out. I'm doing emergency podcasts left and right. Scott's on staycation, lounging on the couch, looking at his beautiful Christmas tree, and I'm just here, just slaving away, having fun, talking about fantasy baseball. Today on the show, we will talk about some of these lesser moves. James McCann signed. It's something. We'll talk about it. We have a bit of a keeper extravaganza. Scott has his top 50 keepers coming out for 2021, coming out soon on CBSSports.com. So we'll give you a little sneak peek on that. We'll talk about some of the players listed there in the ranks. I watched a popular Christmas movie this past weekend. Has Scott seen it? We're going to have to find out. And we do have your mailbag questions, which are mainly keeper and dynasty related. But let's start off with James McCann. Scott, he signed with the Mets 4 years, $40 million. They opt to go with McCann rather than sign JT Realmuto because I think they want to make other moves, whether it's Trevor Bauer or George Springer or Francisco Lindor. That remains to be seen for the Mets. But simple question, is James McCann a top 10 catcher for fantasy?
Yes, he is. I had him in my top 10 already in anticipation of him signing to be a starter. And now, I mean, with this contract, I mean, this is a nice contract for somebody coming where James McCann was coming from. He was an all-star in 2019 for the White Sox as their starter, but in a way that I think people were pretty suspicious of. And I mean, the White Sox themselves, they went out and signed Yasmani Grandal that offseason. But they were still able to find enough at-bats for McCann this year by playing Grandal at first base a lot, actually, to give him enough at-bats to kind of validate that all-star performance of 2019 and actually improve upon it. I mean, the OPS jumped by like 100 points, and he did it with a lower BABIP. So still a high BABIP overall, but he's a good line drive hitter. So you know, the expected stats on StatCast still say James McCann overachieved, but it's one of those situations where I don't know that the expected stats are the first place I look with him. James McCann has consistently had a very high line drive rate, and that's usually a good predictor of batting average. So among catchers, trying to pull open the rankings here, I have... that's not what I thought I was opening. I think I have him ninth. I have him ninth, and that's where I'm going to leave him. Top 10 catcher. I mean, obviously catcher, not the deepest position, but you know, he's one of the more trustworthy guys there, I feel like.
Yeah. You have him ninth in both head to head and roto for catchers. I have him 10th in head to head. He does strike out quite a bit. I also have him 10th in Roto. So just behind Sean Murphy and Gary Sanchez, but I think that's a good place to have him. And I'm happy you addressed the BABIP because I tweeted about him when he signed over the weekend. Someone's like, well, his BABIP is out of control, but you're right. Line drive rate, high line drive rate usually correlates well with a high batting average on balls in play. I trust McCann. I think what we've seen the past two seasons since the start of 2019, he has an 808 OPS, which is tied for sixth among catchers with at least 300 plate appearances. He was a top 10 catcher in 2019, where he was basically an everyday catcher. And he averaged 2.7 fantasy points per game this past season as a part-time player, which was better than Wilson Contreras, who had a down year, and it was better than Christian Vasquez as well. So I like James McCann. No problem with it as a top 10 catcher. I did just want to ask, do you think this has any effect on Lucas Giolito, Scott? Small sample size, everything that we're dealing with, but four starts with Yasmani Grandal as his catcher for Giolito in 2020, a 5.66 ERA, eight starts with James McCann, which of course includes the no-hitter, a 2.61 ERA. Am I reading into things too much here?
Not necessarily. The thing is, I mean, McCann rated as a great framer this year, but I don't think that was true in previous years. Grandal has always been that. I mean, that, like, we know him. For a long time in fantasy, Yasmani Grandal has been one of the high-end catchers. So we think of him as more of an offensive force, but, like, he's even more valuable on the defensive side, I would say. So I think he and Giolito will be able to figure it out. Obviously, they're still going to have another catcher on the roster, and maybe if those two can't figure it out, Giolito will prefer working to the backup. I think it'll be okay. I think they'll figure something out. I don't think the catcher leaving is going to... I can't think of an instance where that's happened before, where a catcher left and then the pitcher was never good again. You know, yeah. that doesn't really happen.
Yeah, and I wouldn't expect that to happen for Giolito. That would be quite extreme. But it is worth noting that it was four of the first five starts that Giolito made the season that he had with Grandal. And it was that first start where he really just got shelled. 3 2/3, 7 earned against the Minnesota Twins in the first start of the season. So that really accounted for a large majority of those struggles. I'm not really worried about it myself. Nate Lowe, Jake Gunther, and a player to be named later were traded to the Texas Rangers for three prospects. Scott, I was doing a dance around the house, having myself a little party. I like Nate Lowe, man. I've been waiting for this guy to get everyday playing time for the past two seasons, and he will have that opportunity with the Texas Rangers now. So I've been chasing the minor league numbers for Nate Lowe, and the strikeout rate was high in 2020, but he did some other really nice things, nearly a 12% walk rate, 28% line drive rate. So what can the upside be for somebody like Lowe, who is now with the Rangers? Can he be a top 15-ish first baseman? Would you start him as like a... him as like a corner infielder for Roto? What are you thinking?
Certainly the upside is there to be a top 15 first baseman. I mean, that's a pretty low threshold that I feel like most everyday players, unless they're just completely without power, and there are very few players like that in the game today, have the potential to be a top 15 player at their position. The whole fantasy baseball world has been pretty excited about Nate Lowe for a while now, and he just kept getting passed over by the Rays. Obviously, won with the Rangers. They had a terrible lineup last year. They really need him. And, my favorite thing about him in the minors was the plate discipline, actually. So I understand it hasn't translated well to the majors. He was striking out a third of the time, very limited samples, obviously. But he seems like a well-rounded hitter based on his minor league production. He doesn't seem like this all-or-nothing guy. And to me, that suggests the upside could be quite high for him. Now, he's on the older side, and Rays are a smart organization. Maybe there's a good reason they kept passing him over. It's not a slam dunk he's going to succeed here, but he becomes a late-round sleeper for sure.
Maybe the Rays know something that we don't, but 2018 in the minors, 985 OPS with 27 homers. 2019 in the minors, 929 OPS, 16 homers. And he has held his own against lefties. I was looking this up. Really at every minor league level, he's held his own against lefties. Done so in the majors as well. So I am pretty excited about Nate Lowe getting an everyday role. The Texas Rangers went out and also signed David Dahl to a one-year, $3 million deal. His career splits, 918 OPS in Coors Field, 722 on the road. Hunter Renfro was signed for a one-year, $3 million deal. Scott, which one of these players are you more interested in, if any? Dahl to the Rangers or Renfro to the Red Sox?
Dahl, because I'm swinging big, right? I'm swinging for the best possible outcome. Renfro, I mean, he does swing big, but it, like, there are clear limitations on who he can be. He's going to be a guy who hopefully slugs a lot of home runs and doesn't do much else. We know that. Dahl, I mean, he's running out of chances to make good on his potential here. I think this is his age 27 season he's going into, so he's getting up there now. Obviously, a lot of injuries have prevented him from meeting that potential. And obviously, he's had good seasons in the past, but they seem dependent on the Coors factor. You mentioned the splits there, and if you break it down even smaller than that, if you chop it up even more, like, the plate discipline's been pretty bad for David Dahl, and it's not like he's been great about elevating the ball either. It seems like his success in the past, what he's had in the majors, has depended on the BABIP inflating effects of Coors Field that obviously he's losing now. Going anywhere else, he was going to lose it. So his best year, 2019, let's say, he had a 386 BABIP that year when he hit 302 with an OPS of near 900. A 386 BABIP. I mean, he's not doing that with the Rangers. So it's going to depend on him becoming a better hitter. I don't think it's just, oh, if David Dahl stays healthy, this is going to be a great find for the Rangers. He has to get better too. And I think he can, but this is more of a late round pick in fantasy if you're thinking of him as a sleeper, kind of like Lowe is. And honestly, I might prefer Lowe.
Oh, I agree. And for David Dahl, you mentioned the plate discipline. He does have to get better in that regard. A 26% strikeout rate for his career, 6.5% walk rate. So that kind of disparity is not going to get it done, especially in points leagues. I will just bring up, and the past two Wednesdays, we've had Will Middlebrooks and Danny Vietti here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. They're doing things more generally baseball related, and they have some former players and current players coming on this week. They have Justin Upton coming on the podcast, so really looking forward to that. But Middlebrooks talked about how he played in the minors in Colorado, and that playing in that altitude, it's really, really hard for your body to recover and to just bounce back from injuries. And he thinks that David Dahl getting away from Colorado is actually going to help him stay on the field more. So for whatever that's worth, you know, there's going to be a trade-off here where maybe he stays on the field more, but he's just not going to be nearly as good on a per-game basis as when he was in Colorado. I think that's fair to say when it comes to David Dahl. Greg Holland is back to the Kansas City Royals. He was really good in this shortened season, a 1.91 ERA, 0.95 whip, 31 Ks in 28 and a third innings. He had 6 saves, and 5 of those came after Trevor Rosenthal was traded away from the team. Scott, I know that you typically target closers later on in your roto or categories drafts. So will Greg Holland be one of those names you target?
Maybe. I guess he probably enters at the favorite, but Mike Matheny was pretty non-committal for most of those 60 games as to who was going to close. Remember, it took him a long time to settle on Trevor Rosenthal. And then after Rosenthal was traded, it's not like he immediately went to Holland. Josh Staumont, Scott Barlow, even Jesse Hahn got some late inning looks, and they'll all be back. They're all younger than Holland. It's not like the Royals paid Holland like a closer, less than $3 million. So I don't think we should just assume Greg Holland is the closer now. I think particularly Staumont, Barlow, and some deeper categories leagues, they're going to get some looks too. But Holland probably starts out as the favorite. And if you had to target just one guy from that bullpen, it would be him.
Let's say they get 30 saves on the season the Royals do, and Holland stays the entire season. There's definitely a chance that they just trade him once they're out of contention, which is probably the assumption for the Kansas City Royals.
I don't know.
You like the Royals, huh? Sneaky?
Well, I mean, I haven't compared every team roster. I haven't compared roster for roster everybody yet. And obviously, they're not done making moves. But
a central
Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
You know, they broke in Singer and Bubich. They have two other big prospects. I mean, three. Asa Lacy, I mean, is their best pitching prospect. And though he was just drafted this past year, he's supposed to move quickly. I don't think it's far-fetched to think he could contribute in 2021. I don't know. There might be a dark horse contender here, those Kansas City Royals.
Ooh, Scott just won over our entire Kansas City audience, and they all hate me. So the point was, if they get 30 saves, I think probably 20 to 22 of those go to Greg Holland. That would probably be my takeaway, at least that many. The Cleveland Indians will drop their nickname, which makes sense where we're at. The Washington football team has done the same in football. And Scott, any suggestions, anything that you've seen that stands out to you? A few that I saw, the Cleveland Spiders, Cleveland Rocks, of course, the Drew Carey intro, or the Cleveland Rockers. But that might be too close to the Colorado Rockies. So I don't know if they're going to go that route. Mm. Cleveland Guardians sounds kind of cool. I read the Hope Memorial Bridge. I don't know much about Cleveland, so whoever's listening that's from that area, you will understand what I'm talking about. The Hope Memorial Bridge, which sits just outside Progressive Field, is known for its gigantic, quote, Guardians of Traffic statues. So those were the three that I found that I thought were interesting. Did you find anything, Scott?
So they used to be the Cleveland Spiders, I think.
Yeah, they were. It was, I don't know, early 1900s or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like any nickname sounds stupid when you first hear it. You know, it's like it's going to take a while for like, okay, to sound normal. It's going to take a while to sound normal, no matter what it is. So, you know, if it sounds cool, I'd worry it might be too trendy, actually. That's what, like, I think of, like, the Toronto Raptors back when Jurassic Park was, you know, still a phenomenon. They got named the Toronto Raptors. And now it's like, I don't know. That seems like one of the sillier team names out there to me. But who knows? Yeah, I don't have a good suggestion myself, because I think my suggestions would sound as stupid as all the other ones do.
Well, Scott, have you heard me talk? All of my suggestions are stupid, so nothing you say will embarrass you here on the podcast. Fun fact, I haven't seen any of the Jurassic Park movies, so I should probably watch.
I mean, there's really only one.
The first one, that's it? That's all I've got to watch?
Yeah, yeah, but, that's...
like The Matrix.
Even more so.
I haven't seen Indiana Jones either, is that weird?
Yes. Is that weird?
Is that another one?
The most iconic movie characters of all time. Is that weird?
Just watch the first one?
Okay. Well, maybe I shouldn't go so hard on you, because I have to admit, I've only seen the first Indiana Jones.
For shame, Scott. For shame.
Now, they're good. Like, especially the third one, right? I can't think of the name right now, but... Last Crusade, I think it is.
I can't tell you.
And you know, Temple of Doom, that gets kind of a mixed reaction from my understanding. But I think overall that's considered a very solid trilogy. You know, Jurassic Park should have just stopped at one. But the first Jurassic Park, I mean, it would be in my top 10 favorite movies all time. It's legitimately great.
You know what's weird is I really like the theme song for Jurassic Park, and I haven't seen the movie, so... very odd.
Very odd.
Something that is not odd, which you should be watching this Wednesday, is it's signing day. So on Wednesday, December 16th, we'll have wall-to-wall coverage over on CBS Sports HQ from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. 24/7's top analysts lead the charge. Barton, Bud Elliott, Steve Wiltfong, Josh Pate, and more. See where your team's class ends up in the 24/7 rankings, the industry standard, live announcements throughout the day, including Flip Watch, rankings leapfrogs, and of course, signing alerts. No matter what D1 school you root for, we'll have you covered with breakdowns of all teams. It's 9 hours of programming after all. That is just insane. Your home for winners and losers, top classes, and diamonds in the rough to remember, all available on the CBS Sports app, on your connected TV, and on your mobile device. Keepers, Last week, we spoke about Dynasty strategy, and we got into some players for Dynasty as well. But Dynasty is a large investment, Scott, mostly in terms of your time. If you want to be good in Dynasty, you have to put the work in. And I think we all kind of heard that in Ian Khan's breakdown of you can be good in it. You have to be able to invest the time. If you don't have that type of time, then a keeper league might make more sense for you rather than a dynasty league. And if you've never played in a keeper league before, it's pretty simple. It starts out off as a redraft league, and then the following year, after the first season of your keeper league, you get to keep however many players, however many you agree upon, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it might be. Some people keep up 10, whatever it is. But like in my home league, for example, head-to-head points, 12 teams, we play with 4 keepers. And every year you keep a player, they move up one round from where they were drafted the year before. So part of the rankings that you're putting together, Scott, are basically players that were drafted late in 2020 that are going to have much higher value entering 2021. So I guess just tell the people a little bit more about your process for that.
Yeah, the top 50 keepers I put together, it was an idea suggested a long time ago, several years ago. And I struggled with the concept of a top 50 keepers list because, you know, I think of a keepers league kind of like you describe. You keep just a handful of players. There's a lot of turnover still. It's not like you have to be so long-term focused. You're mostly just keeping the best players for the upcoming season and trusting, you know, there will still be good players out there. There will still be young players coming up that you can swap out, you know, if a guy gets too old or whatever. So how am I going to distinguish these keeper rankings from like regular redraft rankings? Cause I feel like, you know, most leagues where you keep 4 or 5 players, you just keep the best players. It's not that complicated, but you know, some keeper leagues are run, where you have to give up a draft pick or you're forfeiting something based on what they cost you in order to keep them. And so that's how I've constructed this keeper list. It's based on where they were drafted the previous year, obviously in this case, where they were drafted in 2020. And, you know, it's a list for those leagues where that determines whether or not they're worth keeping. And it still ends up being a lot of the high-end guys because one of my philosophies for this is the impact of the player is more important than the discount you're getting. So like basically all the first rounders, whether or not they were drafted in the first round last year, are going to be in my top 50 because the impact for them is so great. Most of the second rounders are going to be 2. You might get a slight discount for keeping some of them, but some of them not. And even somebody like Alex Bregman, who is getting drafted later in 2021 than he was in 2020, I mean, you're still talking about a first-round caliber player there that I would be reluctant to forfeit in a keeper league. So he's somebody like that would still be on there too. But then you get ones that are mostly on there for the discount, like a Luke Voit, for instance, who was drafted in the round 16 to 18 range this past year. And now he's, you know, looking more like a fifth round type. And that's a big discount. Not many people made this list who are only like an eighth or ninth rounder, even if they were undrafted last year and they're going in like the eighth or ninth round. It doesn't mean they're a bad keeper. It just means there are 50 better ones. And, you know, I had to make some difficult cuts. So I got it narrowed down to 50 in time for this podcast. I started out with a list of like 75, I think. And then there were 6 at the end that were very difficult to cut. The last 2 cuts, I'll go ahead and tell you, were Ian Anderson and Sixto Sanchez, who are kind of in that 8-9 round range now after being undrafted last year. So they're kind of exactly who I'm referring to. They just don't quite have the high-end outcome, at least the expectation of a high-end outcome to justify putting in my top 50. Even though you might theoretically keep them for a long time, you know, again, you're expecting a lot of turnover in this sort of league.
So let's talk a little bit more about Luke Voit. You brought him up and He was great in 2020, a 277 batting average, 22 homers, 41 runs, and 52 RBI. He was the third best first baseman in Roto. He averaged 3.9 fantasy points per game. That was fourth best among first basemen on a per game basis. He was great. The only question that we really have, Scott, is regarding the injuries. In 2019, he dealt with a core injury. This past season, towards the end of the year and in the postseason, he dealt with this plantar fasciitis, which they refer to as foot stuff towards the end of the season. And we were kind of laughing about that. Like, what? Foot stuff? What does that mean? But apparently he's had platelet-rich plasma injections and doesn't expect it to be an issue in 2021. So what we'll do for each of these keepers, Scott, is I'll just ask you a buy or sell question for Voit. Is he a top five first baseman for you heading into 2021?
He is a top five first baseman for me. Fifth, he's my number five first baseman, counting DJ LeMahieu at that position. So yes, he is. But the difficult thing about assessing Luke Voit is I'm pretty confident he's good. You know, for two plus years now, he's been good. 2 years and what, like a month and a half he spent with the Yankees in 2018 and broke out very loudly. But he hasn't always been good in the same way year after year. This past year, he was a massive power hitter. That was the main way he stood out. Also made a lot more contact than he ever had before, but sacrificed some walks. You know, in 2019, before he had the core muscle injury that kind of wrecked his season, he wasn't putting up huge power numbers. He was putting up decent power numbers, but what really stood out was the on-base percentage. He was getting on base so much. So I'm not sure exactly what like the prototype Luke Voit season looks like, but I feel pretty confident he's going to be good. And certainly a discount as extreme as this, you know, more than 10 rounds for a high-end bat. Like, I'm actually not thrilled to take Luke Voit in redraft leagues because I feel like there's a lot of upside for first baseman behind him, but you're factoring in a discount here as a keeper, and that makes him an excellent keeper.
Denelson Lamet was dealing with an injury of his own, similar to Luke Voit, not the same injury, obviously. He was great this past season. I mean, everyone who drafted him as a potential breakout probably couldn't have even imagined a season this good for him. 209 ERA, 0.86 whip, 12.1 K per nine. And what I really liked was in 9 of 12 Lamet starts, two walks or less. We're not used to control like that out of Denelson Lamet. The problem is he ended the season with biceps tightness. He had Tommy John surgery back in 2018. I saw an update, actually, which came out earlier today. We're recording this Monday, December 14th. You'll hear it on Tuesday. But there was an update that said his throwing program remains on schedule. He's so far avoided surgery, and his PRP treatment appears to be having the desired effect. So we'll see. Buy or sell, Scott, Denelson Lamet as an SP2. In 2021,
the upside is certainly there. I thought I was going to really love Denelson Lamet heading into the new season. I mean, I rank him 18th, so I guess I have him as an SP2 technically, but I'm scared of him. I'm scared of even that language is not totally reassuring to me. He's so far avoided surgery. You know, the PRP injections seem to be having the desired effect. Like, Of course, they're going to be painting a rosy picture. If they weren't, he'd already be going in for surgery, right? Like, it just seems like he's beating the odds. And maybe that's not fair, but like, if there's a single pitcher right now who isn't already going in for surgery, hasn't already gone in for surgery, who I would worry is destined for it, he'd be the one, I think. Is there anyone else who has that same level of concern? So, I mean, he's in my top 50 keepers too, because you're talking about a guy who went in the 12th round on average last year, and now he's between like round 4, round 6 range, which is fair. And I think it's too big. Like, you can't let your fears about injury scare you away from that kind of value pick, because, you know, maybe he will be fine. But he'll be lower on the top 50 keepers list than I think the discount at face value would suggest.
Give me a scenario in redraft where you would wind up with Lamet, Scott, or is he just on the do not draft list? Would you have to have say two of your top 10 pitchers to feel comfortable taking him as your SP3? Or like, what would you need to be able to take him?
I would take him as my number three, but it would probably mean he fell. You know, I rank him ahead of Tyler Glass now and Stephen Strasburg,
who have injury concerns of their own, obviously.
Yeah, so I mean, they're my ranking, so I assume I would actually take him ahead of those guys. But it's a problem for me personally if he actually ends up being my SP2. I would rather have him as my SP3, and by the time, it's very likely he's already gone before I'm drafting my SP3. So I don't think I'm going to end up with much of Dinelson Lamet.
Well, maybe somebody Scott does like as an SP2 is Kenta Maeda, who was drafted in rounds 13 and 14 in Roto and head-to-head points, respectively, this past season. Averaged 21 fantasy points per game. That was fifth among starting pitchers. 2.7 ERA, 0.75 whip, 80 strikeouts and 66 and two-thirds for Maeda. 3 earned runs or less in all 11 starts. He only threw more than 94 pitches in just one start, and that was a start where he had a no-hitter going all the way into the ninth inning. Scott, buy or sell Kenta Maeda as a top 50 pick this season. So basically, in a 12-team league, you have to take him within the first four rounds.
I buy it. I have him ranked that way. I have him, even in 5x5 leagues, I have him 35th. I mean, I buy what he did, and I mean, he was just amazing by any measurement in terms of missing bats, in terms of how good his control was. Like, he was just, he was a better ground ball pitcher than he'd ever been before. Like, he did everything right. I think his xFIP, what was his xFIP? Was it like the second best among qualifiers or something? Just going top of mind there, but it was really good. It was really good. And yeah, the thing about keeping him is he's going into his age 33 season, and obviously he doesn't have a long track record of dominating to this extent. It always looked like he should be better than he was with the Dodgers, and they kind of manipulated his innings. He had the third best xFIP among qualifiers behind just, of course, Bieber and DeGrom. Of course, the Dodgers played games with his workload, and the Twins less so. He was going six innings so frequently. Like, I feel like if he had to labor more, they would have let him labor more, but he just didn't have to because he was giving them the length without having to throw many pitches. So I don't even worry so much about the low pitch counts there for Maeda. And I think it's a good example of, if you're talking about a league where you're just keeping a handful of players as opposed to half your roster, don't worry about the age. I mean, this is a top 12 pitcher, and I'd be thrilled to have him at any kind of discount. It turns out it's probably going to be at least five rounds.
Yeah, I mean, if you can keep him for, if it just
he
moves
went
up,
10 rounds. He went 10 rounds later last year than he's going now.
Yeah, if you can just keep him for one or two rounds higher from where you drafted him last year, I mean, you're probably getting him in round 12, 11, maybe even. So it's just a great value for Maeda. And the last thing that I'll add is there was a change in his pitch mix that legitimately helped him get to this point. It wasn't just, oh, like, fluky. Where did this all come from? He decreased his fastball usage about 12%, used his slider 9% more, and used his changeup 6% more. So there was legitimate changes. Slider and changeup are very, very good pitches for Kenta Maeda. I buy as well. I wouldn't mind taking him inside the top 50 picks. But what about Dylan Bundy, who was a round 19 pitcher in Roto and a round 17 pitcher in head-to-head points leagues last season? I've referenced this before. First four starts, 1.57 ERA, 2.92 xFIP. Last eight starts, 4.62 ERA, 4.39 xFIP. Buy or sell, Dylan Bundy is a top 30 starting pitcher this season.
I mean, you're setting such low thresholds here that
top 25?
It's hard for me to sell on any of them.
Top 25?
Now that's getting fringy. I think I'll sell top 25. Let me see exactly where I rank him. So I'm not, yeah, I have him 31. So I can sell, I guess I could sell top 30. I have him 31. Here's the thing about Bundy. I actually ended up having to leave him out of my top 50 keepers. When I sent you these suggestions for who we're talking about, I thought he was going to be in. I actually had to leave him out because I'm not sure he quite measures up stuff wise. I mean, it's all so reliant on that one pitch, that kind of split changeup he has going on. That is responsible for his whiffs largely. And he actually, this year, he actually lost some velocity on his fastball. So it really depended on that one pitch. And yeah, he outperformed his peripherals. He outperformed the XFIP. He outperformed the Sierra. They weren't bad as they are, but he outperformed them by more than half a run. So it seems like he overachieved. XERA, for what it's worth, was actually better than his ERA. That was really low, but I don't trust that one as much as XFIP anyway. Just worth pointing out. I have doubts about Dylan Bundy the same way I do about Lance Lynn, where your doubts can only take you so far because there's just not much alternative once you get to the point where they're going. You know, Lance Lynn does go considerably earlier, but like he throws so many innings. It's hard to pass over him because of some, you know, peripheral concerns there. And it's the same way with Dylan Bundy. But I'm not enthusiastic about drafting Bundy this year. And, you know, even though it's like a 10-round discount for him, I couldn't fit him in my top 50 keepers either. Could fit him in my top 60 keepers, but not my top 50.
So just misses the cut as a top 50 pitcher, keeper rather. And for Bundy, it was one of those things where if you watched him pitch this year, when he didn't have that split change, his slider is a go-to pitch for him as well. Like, there are starts where if he didn't have one of those pitches working for him, everything just snowballed and it got out of control. Like, he came up, he threw mid-90s with the fastball, and there were starts where he kind of went back to that just because he didn't really have anything else. And now he throws like 89, 90 with the fastball. So if he doesn't have everything working, it's tough for Bundy. So
You got the right pitch. I was talking about the wrong pitch. The changeup is okay, but it's really a slider cutter hybrid that gets all his whiffs.
Yeah, so he uses both pitches. I know like his fastball is not the pitch you want him to throw. You want him to throw that slider and that changeup more often than not. And for the first couple of starts, he was moving away from the fastball. That's why we were so excited about him. But then there were other starts where he just didn't have anything else and he had to go back to that fastball, and you just saw everything starting to crumble there. So I like him as an SP4, maybe, but top 30, I'm selling that one as well. Dom Smith is the last name we'll bring up, and obviously this is contingent on whether or not the National League has a DH. We'll find out. He was great. He was great in 2020, this past season. If you look at since the start of 2019, his last 139 games, .299 batting average, 21 homers, a .937 OPS. You know what kind of vibes I'm getting here, Scott? For years, I was looking at the gentleman's name, Jesus Aguilar, and I know a couple people were as well, and they said, you know, if this guy just got everyday playing time, he would be able to break out. And that one year with the Brewers, he finally got the opportunity to play every day. It's exactly how I feel about Dom Smith. He kind of broke out already, but I think there could even be another step for him if the Mets really just unleash him and let him go. Buy or sell, top 10 first baseman if there is a DH in the National League.
I buy him as a top 10 first baseman. I have him actually exactly 10th. It's worth noting first base, not the deepest position right now. It's also worth noting if he's who he was last year, he'll be easily top 10. I mean, he was in terms of fantasy points per game, he was the fifth best first baseman with a solid number of at-bats. So he was legitimately studly this year. He doesn't strike out much. That was true in 2019 too. When also the numbers were pretty strong for Dominic Smith. And he's still only 25. He got drafted so young. I feel like he feels like a guy who's been kicking around for a long time, but that's just because he started so young and it was probably unfair of us to write him off. I felt like I was there came a point there where I was the last one holding on to Dominic Smith. And then once Pete Alonso overtook him, it was like, okay, it's over. It's not going to work out for him. Obviously the DH helped with that. I don't know that that's a make or break thing for him, because obviously Robinson Cano out for the year, suspended. That puts Jeff McNeil firmly at second base. Obviously Yoenis Cespedes, he's out of the mix too. So right now it would be Dominic Smith in left field and JD Davis at third base. It's pretty awful left side of the field defensively. And so maybe the Mets wouldn't feel comfortable with it, but there's so much offense they can get from those two that, like, it's going to be hard to keep either one out of the lineup. And, you know, they're not keeping Pete Alonso out of the lineup, so they may just accept it. I don't know. But I don't think Smith's fantasy value totally depends on DH staying in the NL.
A solid keeper, I would call Tom Smith. And it depends what your league rules are for keepers as well, because in most leagues, he was probably a free agent pickup. So in my home league, if you're a free agent pickup, you're a round 12 keeper. At that point, you probably don't want to keep Dom Smith. If you just get to keep a free agent for the last round pick in your draft, yeah, that's pretty exciting for Dominic Smith. We're going to hit a quick break. When we return, I've got a movie I watched. Did Scott see it? Find out next.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to Fantasy Baseball Today. And in the holiday spirit, this past weekend, Scott, I watched for the first time in my life Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase. You shouldn't be surprised. I assume you've seen it. Have you ever heard of it, Scott? Scott is so disappointed in me right now.
Have you never watched a Christmas movie before? Like, how did you miss that one? Like, that's one of those movies, like, I've watched, like, I'm tired of watching it because, like, it's Christmas and you want to watch Christmas movies, but there's only so many good ones. That's one of the good ones. So you watch it a lot.
It was very good. It was very raunchy. I haven't watched any of the vacation movies, obviously, because I live under a rock, but it was more raunchy than I thought. It was funny. It lived up to the hype. And I went in with a very high bar because people have talked it up. Just the first 28 years of my life, I didn't get around to it until now. So,
okay. Yeah. I mean, what do you want me to say about Christmas? Like, I feel like the audience right now is like, what can even be said about this movie? Because it's been passed around so much. Like, I don't even know what to say.
Is it your favorite Christmas movie, Scott?
It's my wife's favorite. I would say my favorite is Home Alone, which we actually just watched last night. It's another one of those that, you know, only so many good Christmas movies. So you rewatch the good ones probably more than they deserve. But yeah, have you seen Home Alone, Frank?
Oh, I have seen all the Home Alones, even part three, which is egregious on my
I think there behalf. Was like a direct home release Home Alone 4 too. Ugh. Obviously not with, only 1 and 2 had the original cast, of course.
Yeah.
And look, Home Alone 2 is pretty good too.
Home Alone 2, of course, pretty good. In the great state of New York. Yes, I have seen the first three Home Alones. They were all good. I also enjoy Jingle All the Way, Elf, and Just Friends, actually, my favorite Christmas movie.
It's a good one. It's good. It's good.
It just is. Friends. It is a great one.
I actually was looking for that last night before we settled on Home Alone. It wasn't streaming anywhere. So going to watch Just Friends, but I was looking for it.
Be yourself. Be yourself. For anyone else who's seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Mailbag. Continue to email us fantasybaseball@cbsi.com with your questions. If you enjoy the show and want to leave a 5-star Apple Podcast review, you can drop a question in there as well. We would appreciate it. This one's from Michael Franco, which makes me think that it might be from Michael Franco. Was hoping to get your opinion on a trade in a 14-team Dynasty League. We keep our entire roster every year along with a 20-man taxi squad. It's a head-to-head points league. Team A, Alec Bohm and Logan Gilbert. Team B, Matt Chapman and Matthew Liberator. Of course, pitching prospect for the Cardinals. I should have mentioned Logan Gilbert is a pitching prospect for the Seattle Mariners. I'm slightly worried about Chapman's hip situation, and I feel like I need to get Bohm now before his value skyrockets. Also a huge fan of Logan Gilbert. So it sounds like he would be trading away Chapman and Liberator to receive Bohm and Gilbert. Head-to-head points, Dynasty. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I do it. Recently, my top 30 pitcher prospects were released on the site. I have Logan Gilbert in my top 10. Liberator's in the top 30, but I think in terms of upside, he's definitely a step down. And then I love Bohm. I love Bohm especially for points leagues. So I think that could end up being an upgrade, or at least a lateral move, Chapman to Bohm. And, you know, yeah, I do it.
We are in agreement there. This one's from Elliot. I'm in an 8-team, 5x5 roto salary cap league with quality starts, saves plus holds, and OBP instead of the usual wins, saves, and batting average. The innings limit is 1,250, and you start 11 batters, 4 outfielders, plus an infielder, plus a DH, plus all the usual suspects. With 8 teams, a total of about 60 points typically wins the league. As it happens, I will be keeping Bieber, Cole, Bauer, and Corbin Burns or Max Fried, all for tidy prices. I have this crazy notion to go out and draft Jacob deGrom for probably about $40 to $45 and nearly guarantee myself 35 points in pitching, even if I spend $1 on my RPs, which you can do because this is a saves plus holds league, so there are going to be a lot of relievers available, and play the waiver wire, so on and so forth. Am I getting too greedy with starting pitching? I think I might know the answer from Scott.
I don't think you can get too greedy with starting
exactly.
pitching. I mean, if it's a league that where trades happen, like they're going to fetch the most on the trade market of anybody. Maybe not in a 5x5 league. Maybe not base stealers who are actually worth their salt. Maybe those will be the more valuable asset. But I'm not even sure that's true because some teams just won't need another base stealer. Everybody's going to need another pitcher. And you may end up being the one who needs another pitcher. Two of these guys get hurt early on. You'll be glad you have that extra arm, particularly in an 8-team league. I mean, like there are just so many redundancies at all the hitter positions. And you run out of those redundancies faster at pitcher among the high-end arms. So yeah, I think that's a good, I endorse this plan.
This one's from Keenan, Keeper League, where you keep 3 head-to-head categories. Trade Paul Goldschmidt and Kyle Lewis for Kyle Tucker. Am I overvaluing Tucker? I would then slot Dom Smith to first base to replace Goldie. Trade Goldie and Kyle Lewis for Kyle Tucker, Scott.
Keep 3. Yeah. Yep. I mean, I assume you wouldn't be keeping either Goldschmidt or Lewis. Am I presuming too much in this question here? Like you might keep Tucker. You probably want to keep those two. I assume you're keeping Tucker by trading for him.
Mm-hmm. That's what I assume as well.
Right. But you're only keeping 3. I don't know that Tucker would be necessarily a top 3 keeper for every team, but maybe it would be for yours. I don't know. I don't really see what the down. I don't really see why he's asking this question, because if I'm interpreting it correctly, it seems too obvious even to ask. You trade the guys you're not keeping for somebody you'd keep.
So let's assume for a second, Scott, that he was planning on keeping Goldschmidt and Kyle Lewis. And as a result of getting Kyle Tucker, he can now keep Dom Smith. Would you like that side more? Tucker and Dom Smith versus Goldschmidt and Kyle Lewis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, straight up, I'd probably keep Dom Smith. I know I'd keep him over Lewis. I might keep him over Goldschmidt too.
Okay.
Cool. So yeah, that's easy. Yeah.
This one's from Jordan. 12 team head-to-head categories. Keeper league, 6x6 with OPS as the added hitting category, and quality starts instead of wins, net saves and holds instead of just saves, and K per nine as the added sixth category on the pitching side. Choose 7 keepers from the following. I went ahead and chose 5 that I thought were the most obvious ones, which included Trevor Story, Trevor Bauer, Aaron Nola, Yordan Alvarez, and Adalberto Mondesi. I chose those 5. So choose 2 more out of these names, Scott. Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Lewis, Nick Castellanos, Randy Arozarena, Alec Bohm, Mike Yastrzemski, Austin Meadows, Dylan Bundy, Edwin Diaz, Raisel Iglesias. 2 of those.
I keep Bundy and Rizzo. I think you need the arm for sure because you only have Bauer and Nola, and I suspect with this many keepers, 7 keepers, most of the pitchers of that ilk are going to be kept. So you got to lock up Bundy. And then really it's just a close call between Rizzo and Castellanos for me for that second spot. I rank Rizzo a little bit ahead. First base is going to be harder to fill. Castellanos might be the higher upside play, so I wouldn't mind you doing that, but I'd go Rizzo.
I wasn't off base by including Adalberto Mondesi as one of the keepers, right? Even with OPS as a category?
I mean, he's going to single-handedly win you stolen bases, probably. So, no, that's right.
Okay. And Arozarena wasn't close to Castellanos or Rizzo.
He's third, if I'm ranking all of these by their keeper prospects. He'd be third.
All right. This one's from Matt in NorCal. I play in a keeper league 5x5 head-to-head categories. We keep 7 with no stipulations. I have 2 spots available for starting pitchers. Gallen is my no-brainer, but who else should I take out of Ian Anderson, Tristan McKenzie, Sixto Sanchez, Zach Plesac, Mackenzie Gore, Nate Pearson, Spencer Howard? I could free up another spot by dropping Hiora or Luis Robert, but not a fan of that idea. So you need 1, Scott. Ian Anderson, McKenzie, Sixto, Plesac, Gore, Pearson, Howard. Interesting names. It's close.
I think it's Plesac. I might consider Anderson and Sanchez. Like if I'm going to say anybody's close, it's those two. But I have Plesac 10 spots ahead of Anderson in my rankings. I'm a Plesac believer, and he's the choice to keep here.
This one's from Morgan Day. NL only league. Roto. Salary cap, $260 budget. Grade the trade. I gave up Kershaw for $23. Max Fried, $15. Garrett Hampson, $13. I received Luis Patino for $11. Brandon Woodruff for $6. Austin Slater for $6. Chris Taylor for $3. And minor leaguer Marco Luciano. Plus, I shed $25 that I can use to extend Fernando Tatis. And I'll only grade the trade. This seems like somebody who's rebuilding here, Scott. Or retooling, rather.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... What is Hampson worth, really? I don't know, but it might be next to nothing. It might be, based on what he's shown us so far. I mean, in an NL-only league, obviously, you go a lot deeper, and I guess just as a cheap steal source, like maybe, worst case, he'll be that, maybe. But did he didn't even run this much this past year, did he? That 60-game season. So, you know, Kershaw to Woodruff, you're getting Woodruff at a much lower dollar amount, and that's basically for 2021 returns, that's about equal in terms of what they're going to provide. You're losing Fried, but getting some offense there, and Taylor, getting Luciano could be a great keeper long-term, and then it's helping you lock up Tatis. I don't think taking the deal is a slam dunk, but I get why you're doing it. I mean, if I was grading it, I might give it just like an even C, and it just depends. I guess it just depends on how good the rest of your team looks, whether you want to stick with Kershaw and Fried with Hampson as a little extra steal source. I mean, maybe Hampson will go off this year and you'll really regret doing it, but I'm leaning no on that one.
Leaning no.
Okay. Leaning no on Hampson going off. Okay. For the trade itself, leaning yes.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. I was going to say C plus, and C is even usually. So I like it slightly in your favor, Morgan. This one's from Kyle. Are you guys gamers at all? Want to talk about your favorite video games at all for a bit? I hear Scott mention it every now and then. Well,
yeah.
Scott hosts a podcast on the side that's called All That's Fit for 8-Bits, in which he reviews the classic NES games. So,
yes, I did. Yes, the season finale just came out today. Reviewed Shadowgate for the NES, and people seem to like it. I do. If you like the Michael Caine impression, I do that in one of the episodes. I actually do a different impression each episode. I pick out a music track from the game and write lyrics to it and sing it at the end of every one. So it's kind of a whole, you know, listening experience. You're definitely getting more than just a breakdown of the game, but you're getting that too. And I enjoy doing it. People seem to enjoy listening to it. That's All That's Fit for 8-Bits. That's what it's called. I don't do a lot of modern games myself. There just isn't enough time. There just isn't enough time. You know, I could make the little kid's excuse. I feel like that gets used a lot, but it's true. They just consume so much of your life. And when you get some spare moments to yourself, it's hard. Like you get like an hour or two window. It's hard to sit down for this very like involved game where the hour or two window might not even progress far enough to feel like that was time well spent. You know what I mean? So I've kind of, except for the old school games that I can get through quickly, I've kind of put the games, the video games aside for this season of my life. I hope to get back into them at a later season. But yeah, I don't do much of the modern stuff. What about you, Frank?
Well, do you have, give me your three favorite NES games, Scott.
For the NES specifically, I would probably go not in order. I'll give the easy answers are Tecmo Bowl, which I also reviewed already, Ninja Gaiden, which I'm hoping to review next year, and then the controversial one would be Friday the 13th, which isn't considered a good game, but I think it's just because people were scared when they played it and never bothered to figure out how to play it correctly, because I think it's actually an awesome game. And I review that one too on All That's Fit for 8-Bits. So check out that episode if you have any experience with Friday the 13th.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Scott, because there was a Friday the 13th game that came out recently, the past couple of years, that you could play on Xbox and I believe PC as well. And you play online. One person is randomly chosen to be Jason and the rest of the people are camp survivors. And I played it quite a bit and it was fun. It was a very fun game. So I do have an Xbox Series X. I play NBA 2K21 whenever I have time. I don't even have kids and I barely have time to play. So that I certainly know where you're coming from, Scott. Gears of War has always been my go-to online multiplayer game. I'm a huge Pokemon nerd. I own every Pokemon game, traditional Pokemon game, from Pokemon Red to the most recent Pokemon Shield. I am a nerd.
For what it's worth, my favorite game of all time is Suikoden 2, which was an RPG for the PlayStation 1. Mm. And it's just an excellent, excellent game. That whole series, Suikoden, it didn't get the attention it deserved, but it's very strong overall.
Did you ever play Legend of Dragoon, Scott?
I did, yeah.
That was an awesome game.
Played it two or three times.
Yeah. I like it, and I appreciate it. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Thursday. Bye-bye.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.